Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're tackling the first half of Autechre's 13th studio LP, the four-part, eight-hour-long NTS Sessions 1 through 4, released in 2018. The plan is to dive deep into the first two NTS sessions today, then focus on the next two in a separate episode 2 weeks from now. However, we'll definitely zoom out and reflect on the entire project next time as well. Plus, we'll talk about bonus track Sinistral Sentinel on a bonus listener email episode a week after that. The point being, if you've got thoughts to share on literally any part of the NTS sessions or even the album as a whole, you still got plenty of time to send that stuff in, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. And just to clarify, if you've already emailed us about the NTS sessions, I've tried to single out comments that are relevant to the first two sessions specifically, and I'm saving the other stuff for next time. But we want even more comments about the last two sessions and the entire project. Again, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. All right, Dan, we may or may not end up repeating some of this stuff next time, but what background info do we need to know about the NTS sessions as a whole and NTS 1 and 2 specifically?
Yeah, on April 3rd, 2018, Autechre announced a month-long residency with NTS, an online radio station based in London. Four broadcasts, each 2 hours long, were scheduled for the 5th, the 12th, the 19th, and the 26th of that month, but no one knew if the guys planned to share new material or just mix some records as they had for an NTS broadcast back in 2016. According to Rob, the mystery was part of the point. They knew that listeners would be expecting a mix of other people's musics, and they aimed for a slow revelation along the lines of, I haven't heard this tune before, they're playing some new record of somebody, is this Autechre? Sean likens it to their early days on pirate radio, saying we would play other people's records, but every now and then we'd slip in our own tracks. We knew nobody would expect us to play 8 hours of new Autechre. It was kind of absurd, you know, ridiculous.
With that in mind, the broadcasts were carefully edited and sequenced to feel like genuine radio shows, but the album still has a, quote, overall flow. Sean explains, I don't expect many people will listen to all 8 hours in one sitting, but I want it to be possible, and it's kind of a journey. There is kind of a rough narrative where the first is more straightforward, the second is a deep plunge, the third is a development of two, and the fourth is kind of a deep future. Rob adds a little more detail, saying the first one starts out narrow and widens out and widens out. The second one explores how far we can go. Third, you've got so much width now, almost anything is possible. The fourth one, you don't know what they're doing with the gas or atomic level stuff, or, and just as important, cosmic with one another. There is gravity and heaviness. I should mention that this is from an interview with some Japanese site that seems to be like translating their answers to Japanese and then back to English, so it gets a little weird in places. But I'll throw it back to you, Dan, for more of this extra long background info section.
Yeah, as far as the material itself, Sean notes that they first conceived of the sessions as alternate versions of existing Autechre material, so tracks often refer back to other tracks, elements, parts, or ideas from previous work. Indeed, the guys only agreed to the residency after realizing they had enough material and patches to fill 8 hours. Sean explains that the oldest thing is from 2011, but that was just an archive of the jam that became Blade Loris. Then there are a couple things in between XI and LSEC. The rest is weird recent jams using old patches. Sean says that in their recent work, we were making everything incredibly upfront, almost a cartoon-like version of club music where every sound is audible. So they returned to older patches in order to play with deep mixing where you've got things you aren't necessarily aware of at first listen, he adds. Unconsciously, we were making the kind of tracks we would have made for IBC radio when we were doing that in 1991. We had the Lego feet days in our heads.
Last but not least, I just want to sum up the critical response, which was overwhelmingly positive. Resident Advisor called the NTS sessions a, quote, pinnacle, as if the preceding decades of work were acts of research leading to this point. Pitchfork, who completely trashed LSEC, as you'll remember, gave it a glowing 8.2 review, and The Wire named it the 8th best album of 2018. Fans on Rate Your Music have rated the entire project at a shockingly high 4.01, though the average rating of the individual releases is a 3.58. On that note, the first two sessions are actually the lowest rated of the bunch, with a 3.47 for NTS1 and a 3.59 for NTS2. NTS3 and 4 are tied at 3.63, but we'll talk about those next episode. So Dan, it's not like a ton of time has passed since NTS came out. Actually, I think we're approaching the third anniversary this month. But what is your sense of the album's reputation among fans nowadays?
I mean, maybe because it's so recent, I feel like this one is definitely a fan favorite, you know, that's constantly getting talked about on the, you know, our Autechre and all, and Twitter too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it does it seems like this monster achievement that for some reason, I mean, it just feels like these increasingly large projects like XI and LSEC, they caused a big splash and a lot of people checked them out who maybe would not have otherwise been Autechre fans. And I'm sure it converted a lot of new fans. But I do think that they were sort of divisive, like among casuals, let's say, who, you know, found them kind of overwhelming. For some reason, NTS is like much bigger, and yet it seems to be just kind of widely celebrated. You know what I mean? Like, I never hear even the kind of casual fans talking shit about this.
Yeah. You know, maybe this is more for the big picture thing, but I think it's because, you know, this is more, this could be more easily listened to in four separate chunks. I mean, even the way we're doing this podcast, you know, we talked about how, you know, we thought about splitting up LSEC, but it, you know, it just didn't really work for it. But as you can see, you know, we're splitting NTS up, and I think it's even though it's 8 hours, it's more digestible in a weird way.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I also think the sound is a little bit more approachable. We'll talk about that as well. What is your previous, you know, familiarity, personal history with the NTS sessions?
Yeah, I mean, I was super excited when they released these. You know, the first one, it was the, you know, like we said in that background, you know, didn't know if it was going to be, you know, them just spinning records, which was interesting. You know, I'd still listen to it, but you know, once everyone figured out that it was just new Autechre, you know, it was really awesome each week. You know, listening to it, I always like come home and take a nap during lunch, and I skipped my nap each week. You know, to keep listening, especially the first one. I remember, you know, there was no indication that it was going to be released in any way or anything. So, you know, you really had to be, you know, sitting there listening because it might be your only chance. And I remember, like, as soon as it was over, you know, someone on like our Autechre uploading it to like Dropbox or something and sharing it and just having like, you know, a one massive 2 hour file, you know, until it finally was officially released on the store.
Yeah, I mean, since then, is it something you listen to all the time or what?
I put, you know, I don't listen to all 8 hours all the time, obviously, but yeah, I definitely you know, put it on. You know, I bought the box set, you know, the vinyl box set, so I pop it on here and there whenever the wife's not around.
Yeah, I you know, I had sort of a similar experience, but you know, I was a little bit late because I just wasn't expecting anything like noteworthy at all, just, you know, mixing or something. And, you know, by the time you filled me in on what was really going on, then I was like all prepped to listen to the second show. And I was there every week after that. And, you know, we'll talk more about it in a minute because we got some emails about it. But yeah, just like devouring each one week by week was such a treat. I have this weird personal connection to it because at that time I was like really working hard on my dissertation and just like literally listening to whatever session had just come out on a loop, like 9-10 hours a day, every single day. And really enjoying it despite how miserable I was. And I still put it on all the time. Like, it's just like one of my total go-to Autechre albums for sure. Now, in contrast to our usual practice of starting big before gradually zooming into the individual parts, I think we should, you know, get right into the specifics of NTS 1 and 2 and do most of our zooming out next episode. But there are a few big picture things I think we've got to discuss up front, namely the way the album was originally released, as we were just kind of touching on. We heard from a bunch of listeners with fond memories of that initial four-part broadcast. Listener Colin noted that NTS was his first proper release since becoming a fan and called getting to listen to 2 hours of fresh Autechre every week live with fans an incredible experience. Listener Jeff said he's never fully gotten into LSEC because it was just dumped on us all at once, but one of the most genius things about NTS was its mode of release. Breaking it up into weekly installments lets you digest each session fairly well before it was time to get acclimated to the next. For each, I would schedule my day to tune into the initial broadcast. Then later that night, someone on We Are the Music Makers would release their recording so I could go back through and listen to each song at my convenience. Then a few days later, the official files would appear on the Bleep store and I could further explore each track. And by the time I'd heard the session 8 to 10 times, it was time to start the whole process over and pick up the next session. Listener Darren wrote, "When I first heard the Autechre would be doing a 2-hour slot on NTS Radio every week of April, I imagined it was going to be DJ sets, a promotion for an upcoming release. Like probably everyone else, I had no idea that these radio broadcasts were in fact the new release. On many of your episodes, there's been a discussion about AE's experimenting with format, and this is the culmination of that exploration. Also, the thrill of listening to that first transmission in real time, connecting with fellow listeners online, and collectively freaking out as it became clear this was all new tracks was so much fun." So we talked a little bit about our memories of those initial broadcasts. Maybe you want to say more, but I'm also kind of interested in like what you think that experience and like the surprise of it and all the communal aspects kind of adds to this release. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, that's one thing that that really gets lost now that things just come out at, you know, at midnight on Thursday night, on streaming and stuff. I really like these, communal event type things. It's so much fun, like, you know, chatting with people, you know, when it's everyone's first time, like, listening to it at the exact same time, you know, especially like that being a radio broadcast, you know, it literally everyone was at the same page because it was live, you know,
right.
You know, even when stuff drops, you know, at midnight or whatever, you know, a lot of times you'll listen to it and there'll be a thread or something, but, you know, some people started 5 minutes earlier, you know, or whatever. And,
right,
and so
right.
you're not on the same page, but that was like, so, you know, much, much fun. It's something that like, I almost wish that like TV and stuff, you know, wasn't like on demand now, you know, like once the internet got so big, you know, like we didn't have both at the same time, you know, it's just so like much fun chatting with people. Like when the new Twin Peaks came on, you know, I would do it. So it's just like fun chatting with people who are also like so into like such a niche, like, you know, thing like Autechre or a new show, Twin Peaks, you know, something like that. It's like, you know, even if you have like a couple friends, you know, like basically you're the only person I know in real life that likes Autechre, and, you know, like we'll text about, you know, the new record or something. But it's fun when you have like a whole, you know, community that's into it as much as you, or you know, or even in even more.
Yeah, and I mean it was extra fun for me because I think I talked about this on our like first reactions to Sign and Plus episodes, but they did like a live stream for that, and it just seemed like the place where everybody was chatting was like on the site itself, and it was just like a mess of shit posting. But for NTS, I was like on the our Autechre subreddit, and you know, it's a little slower, you know, easier to follow. And it was just thrilling. It was such excitement. There was so much, like, you know, just such surprise to it because you didn't know if, like, a track was going to be, you know, 5 minutes or 20 minutes an hour,
yeah.
You know? And you're just, like, listening to this thing. You don't know if it's going to change or, like, what's going to happen, really on the edge of your seat. So the question is, like, is this kind of a crucial element to this album that is now lost for newcomers?
You know, maybe a little bit, you know, especially since it is like specifically a radio broadcast, like you talked about, like the Plus, you know, Sign like streams. Those weren't as, you know, necessary because it wasn't part of the format, you know, it was just basically a sneak peek or whatever. But yeah this,
right.
I mean, these are like literally designed to be radio broadcasts, you know, like their length and everything like perfectly fits in the space they were given. So I think a little bit is kind of lost in it. I mean, it's not to say that like it's not worth listening to, or, you know, you're not going to give it a 5, you know, because you didn't hear it live the first time or whatever. But I mean, it's something that like, definitely when I think of like this record, I think of those like experiences, you know, chatting with everybody and, you know, the excitement of when like they finally, you know, one of them finally got released like on the store, and then, you know, knowing we would get them, you know, it was just like such a
fun. And like having to sit with it, you know, like you no longer that necessity of like, And I would recommend people like just have the discipline to like spend an entire week with one at a time. And I know not everybody is going to do that, but it really serves the project well. There's more to say on this. that I want to, that other listeners kind of wrote into on the topic of format specifically. So like listener Joe wrote in to emphasize how important the title and visual presentation of the album is. He notes that the title refers to both the broadcast and the actual sessions that the music was created in, something kind of analogous to like Bob Dylan's basement tapes. And that this title helps prevent people from imagining some kind of cinematic narrative by naming the music after the music itself. Joe also praises Designer Republic's clean, white, minimalist packaging, which deliberately resembles an archival collection of a series of radio shows. He says that it leaves virtually nothing to overanalyze and directs all attention onto the music itself, while simultaneously and thought-provokingly fitting a modern data dump style release into two dead formats, vinyl and radio. So I want to ask you about the artwork, you know, and you know, maybe what Autechre are trying to say about formats and mediums this time around. But it is really kind of remarkable about, we're talking about how like important that kind of experience was, the radio broadcast experience to the thing. And it's interesting how the artwork kind of like pushes you to think of it that way. You know, it does look like an archival collection, like you would, you know, like if John Coltrane did radio broadcasts or something over the course of a year and it just collected all of them. You know what I mean? It's like, it kind of asks you to listen in the way we were just talking about.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, especially like the physical packaging, like of the vinyl box set and stuff, it really like, you know, it's just this clean white box, you know, just there's nothing on the back of it. It's just the, you know, the cover that we ripped off for our logo, you know, on the front. And then each, you know, individual sleeve has the same thing on it. Just, you know, one and then A or B, C, D, E, F, you know, times four. And then, the when you have all the records in, like, so that you know they're in the right order, they have like each one has a progressively longer line on the side that that makes like a little triangle, you know, when they're all set up next to each other and stuff. It's just like very like something that would be in a library or something, you know. It's right, like very archival.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's fascinating, and it is kind of profound actually, like what listener Joe brought up, that, you know, it is kind of like this. We talked about how LSEC is like this kind of earth-shattering moment, like, you know, ripping off the shackles of physical format and just totally embracing the digital, sort of. You know, we talked about how it doesn't exactly make sense. But here, it's interesting how they figured out a way to, like, package this kind of new, like, freedom in, you know, what's like very kind of going extinct formats. I mean, it's bizarre and genuinely thought provoking, I think.
Yeah, it. I mean, we talked about it. It's sort of like odd that they did it with this, and they didn't do it with LSEC. I talked about it. Like, LSEC doesn't, the times don't work out super well, and it does on NTS. You know, obviously besides All End, which is split over a couple sides, but I think it. It is for that like archival sort of thing, even though now I think you can't buy the box set anymore. I think you can only buy like individual sets of each session. But I mean, it's still, it just like to put it that way, I think like makes it even more of an archival, you know, type of situation.
Yeah. Do you love the visual kind of look of this record?
Yeah. I think it's like super awesome. You know, I mean, it's, like the listeners say, you know, it doesn't like give you too much or too little. It's just like exactly, you know, all you need and stuff. I don't know. I think it's like so clean and sleek and just it's probably my favorite like Autechre album covers, this or AE Live maybe.
Yeah, it's got like a very, I don't know, just something like almost instantly iconic about the way it looks and instantly memeable as our podcast, you know, cover shows. But all right, so on that note, I want to kind of just start getting into NTS1. How would you describe the overall like sound palette and style of this first installment specifically, assuming you think that's possible?
It's I don't know that it is possible, you know. It's so much with these like giant tracks, but even though they're giant tracks, there's still 2 hours of them. So there's, you know, nine of these giant things. Yeah. And I think it changes quite a bit
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, because yeah, there's obviously like a diversity of sounds, and I think NTS is kind of known for being like a diversity of sounds. But you know, if you take it like individual NTS, some sort of identity I think emerges. And you know, I'm tempted to say that with NTS one, you get a lot of these. I want to say like there's a huge emphasis on the beat, like on the groove, I think, on this NTS in particular. Where you often get like a pretty kind of steady, you know, beat, like a steady kind of groove. It's like the beat programming is like the star of the show, the lead singer of each song. And then if you, it'll be kind of like this steady, almost like simple mid-tempo kind of groove. And then if you listen sort of deep in the pockets of it, there's like just a lot of funk, I feel like, just a ton of it. And I'm not just saying that because of the debris funk, but just like a lot of funkiness. And then sometimes it kind of like just becomes like very prominent, like on, you know, North Spiral and Gonk Steady One are like the most obvious, like groovy. But even on some of the weirder tracks here, that groove is like kind of deep in it. And I just feel like it's so... I don't know. It's just it's striking coming off of LSEC, and we could talk about this more in a minute, but how emphasized the groove is here.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. You know, every track for the most part, like, sort of has like some sort of thing to latch onto, like that. That almost, you know, like is like a loop. Not to say like the, you know, the songs are super repetitive, which I mean some of them are, but there's always like a part of it that is repetitive, and that's the groove, the beat, you know, going through it.
Yeah, but it's like it's so fascinating to me because like on XI had a similar style where it was like always kind of like a steady beat to kind of anchor you, but what you really end up kind of your attention sort of gravitates toward all the textures and like the wooziness on top and like the sheer sound design of it. Here I feel like your attention is just sucked right to the groove.
Yeah, it's
and
you sort
actually of have to. It takes effort to like look away from it and dig through the cracks, you know.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. It's sort of like the inverse of XI and what you said about having to like pay attention. Today at work, I was doing, you know, a last listen through of all 4 hours, and you know that there was some times when I thought like, oh man, I gotta play that track again. I wasn't really, you know, paying attention. You know, I was only catching that groove. You know, I was trying to write, you know, my final little notes and stuff, and I really had that several times.
Yeah, I had a lot of the same thing where I would be like, when did that sound like start? You know, I didn't even like notice it because I was thinking about something else. I was thinking about like the kick drum or something, and mm-hmm. I didn't even notice like this really pretty like synth line that like when the has that been going on for 10 minutes or has it been going on for 1 minute? I have no idea. You know, what do you think about Sean and Rob's comments that NTS is more, quote, straightforward and, quote, starts out narrow and widens out? Do you hear that? Do you hear, you know, that emphasis on deep listening that they also talk about?
I mean, I think the deep listening thing is definitely, you know, what we were just talking about, you know, that you can, there's this surface listening of, you know, catching that beat and stuff, but then, you know, you can find all these like little, you know, Easter eggs all throughout it. As far as like being straightforward, I don't know that I mean, is Odd Taker really ever that straightforward? But I don't see this one as being so straightforward, especially the way it starts out, you know, with T1A1. You know, it takes like so long before you actually like hear it, which I was trying to think back. I couldn't remember in the radio broadcast, like, were we all freaking out that it like wasn't working? I was really trying to remember. I couldn't, you know, it goes from that like straight into BQ, 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 which is probably the strangest, you know, Odd Taker track. I don't find that like too straightforward.
Yeah, it's a weird start for sure. I mean, that sort of like belies that claim, but I think once you get through that, it's hard to call it like straightforward, but there is just something about like, you know, Gonk Steady One in particular, and like even North Spiral and even Four of Seven in a way that is like so immediate and like so almost like danceable toward this like latter, this last hour here.
Yeah.
That, even though there is a lot of weirdness, for some reason, when I like take a step back and I just was, if I was just like asked to talk about NTS One, I would say like, oh yeah, that's like the dance party NTS, you know, even though it's like not strictly true for a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is true for parts of it. I mean, Gunk Steady One, I think is like really dancey, and North Spiral is sort of like the sort of most normal Autechre, you know, like old Autechre or something track, I think on NTS, at least the first one. And so, yeah, I guess that, yeah, I guess there are definitely parts of it that I think could qualify as being straightforward, but I just wouldn't classify the entire thing as that. But I mean, you know, it's Autechre.
But I will say that, like, you know, we'll talk about this more in a minute, but like spending these 2 weeks just going back and forth between NTS1 and NTS2, I feel very comfortable saying NTS2 is like way fucking weirder than NTS1 at least.
I agree.
So, <Yeah. laughs> you know, straightforward for them, I guess. You know, I mentioned that listener Joe thinks that the term sessions and the looseness and freedom that implies is significant here. And listener Darren similarly wrote in to say the fact that the only constriction was a 2 hour long window that gave them a level of freedom and space to stretch out. The sound had a live and direct quality, and some tracks felt improvised, others more composed, but it ultimately felt like studio recordings that most closely connected with their approach to playing live. There's a looseness in the tracks that feels fresh and uninhibited, which suits something of this duration. Do you hear that looseness and jamminess on NTS1 specifically? And you know, what do you make of the super long track durations? Maybe another question just to throw on you all at once is like, is there a structure to these tracks, or are they just like jams?
You know, I do see like some jamminess throughout here. You know, I think North Spiral has like some jammy qualities and stuff. I think a lot of it is like what you were talking about. The, you know, there's always like that beat for you to hang on to. And then I feel like all the, you know, little accoutrement around that is like sort of often improvised or, you know, jammed around it. As far as like the monster track links, I think that is again part of the jam feel of it, and playing with the session quality of it. You know, we've talked in the past how in interviews they said, you know, they would play these things for themselves, where, you know, just kind of went on forever and stuff. And it sort of feels like that here at points, you know, when some of these are really long, like, you know, I think BQ goes on quite a bit, maybe too long, and stuff, you know, so it's not always to their benefit. But yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like I was going to say it feels like they've got 2 hours to fill, but that seems more negative than I mean it. You know, it doesn't feel like, this could be 40 minutes, but we've got 2 hours, so everything's going to be 30 minutes long. It doesn't feel like that, but it does feel like, you know, they've definitely got room to breathe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I want to say that there are some tracks here that feel like kind of carefully composed or something. And I was going to actually point to BQ. You know, we'll talk more about that later because it's a pretty divisive track, but it feels like kind of it's got a clear kind of direction and endpoint or something. I think 4 of 7 is like a similar way because it arrives at something. But a lot of the tracks do have this kind of like loose jamminess. Most of the tracks do. And I don't know, it strikes me as like, so we talked about with Elsek how, in my opinion, Elsek sounds like a lot of reliance on the kind of generative software, and like all the things are set up and it's almost like just letting accidents happen or something like that. Like,
yeah,
no humans in the room kind of a quality. A lot of tracks here have like a knob twiddling energy.
Definitely.
To them,
yeah.
To me. Like very, very different, I think, from Elsek, where it's like, you know, stuff like T1A1, like it just feels like they are straight up, you know, they've got the like thing set up, the machinery that's making this music, and you know, digital machinery probably, but they are like twisting and tweaking things in real time and like kind of reacting. I also kind of felt like I had this like weird epiphany that I tried for many years to get into the Grateful Dead, and I did not succeed until 2018, and I started being like, did NTS help me understand the Grateful Dead? But you know, I say that half jokingly, but honestly, there's like a weird virtuosity to some of these tracks. Like I find myself sometimes thinking, like, I can't believe this is still going, and I can't believe it's still awesome. Like, you know, when Jerry Garcia is just like shredding, and it's like he's been going for like 10 minutes, and you're like, how long can he keep this up? Like, it has that same kind of weird, fun energy to it, like a tightrope. Like, this is going to get boring at any second, but it still has it. How is it possible?
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. You know, we've made the joke many times on the podcast, but I mean, Odd Tucker really is the you know, Grateful Dead of electronic music. I think it really is like the same kind of thing. There's a virtuosity, you know, instead of shredding on a guitar, they're shredding on a computer, basically. Or synths and stuff, you know, like it is just like, I think to you know, like T1A1, like you said, I agree, that one feels very like knob twiddly. And, you know, the thing is like, if you gave that same patch to, you know, somebody, you know, you or me, who has minor experience, you know, with electronic music or something, but we're not virtuosos or anything. You know, you wouldn't come. It's not like you would come to the same thing. I think like your knob twiddling might sound like shit, you know. And it's the same thing. Like, I couldn't play guitar, you know, a guitar solo for 20 minutes and anyone want to hear that, you know. It's that same. It's like knowing like that you can do. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but
there's just some kind of like fireworks to it. Like, you're just like on Gong Steady One, it's like, how many different ways are they going to chop these sounds up, you know? And you're just like in awe that they just keep reinventing it or something. And yeah, when we say knob twiddly, I mean, that might sound negative, but it's like kind of a weird live energy, you know? Like,
that's what
you kind of want to hear when you see live electronic music, is like humans like reacting to the crowd and stuff in real time, and you feel that.
Yeah, it's not that just like, you know, press play kind of thing like you get with,
right, which can be cool also.
I mean, depending on what it is, but I mean, it definitely, I don't mean knob twiddling it in a negative sense. I think of it basically the same as you know, a guitar solo or something, even though I despise guitar solos.
Well, we've started doing it a little bit, but I think it makes sense to compare and contrast NTS with LSEC a little bit at this point, especially in regard to those long tracks. Listener Joe wrote, people are way off when they call NTS simply a bigger version of LSEC in terms of the actual music, but I do agree that the format of LSEC was an attempt at what they finally achieved with NTS sessions. Joe adds, the sound is very different. Most of LSEC sounds much more raw and aggressive than NTS. And listener Colin says, it's a bit more accessible than LSEC, adding, it sounds like a more mature version of the LSEC sound, perhaps a bit more arranged and less freeform live sequences too, actually. So how do you think the sound of NTS compares with the sound of LSEC, at least in regard to NTS-1? And is the jamminess we were just talking about different, you know, from that on LSEC?
I think I agree with the listeners there. You know, I think it gets a lot of comparison with LSEC because obviously, you know, they're both these like huge, massive, you know, projects. I guess they sort of have similar artwork and stuff, you know, so I think the comparisons are obviously going to happen. But I think that NTS like is a more, you know, sort of mature thing. Like LSEC was, you know, playing with that format of, you know, we can do an album for 4 hours or whatever, you know, we're not limited by anything. And then NTS is saying, you know, our only limitation will be, you know, these 2 hour blocks, you know, but we can do four of them or whatever. I think it is like a much more like refined version of that idea. As far as like the sound goes, you know, I agree with the listener who said that LSEC, you know, is like a more like raw sounding thing. You know, this, Sean or Rob, whichever said it in that thing we read, you know, that this one, it's like they took a different way of mixing it. You know, it's more upfront. You can hear like the sounds and stuff. Like they said,
I mean, LSEC is like more in your face. It's more like exploding all the time and like, you know, trying to blow your head off. And yeah, this has more of, I guess, that emphasis on deep listening, more of like the groove. I mean, we mentioned a lot last episode about how LSEC feels like a little bit non-linear. Like you're just looking at like this big landscape and you're going to like spend 20 minutes in it, but it's not like going to go anywhere. You're just going to like live in it and look around at all the different things that are going on. these tracks on NTS feel very linear. Like they are like forward marches, almost every single one. And they are just like almost relentless, like chugs forward and like high energy in that kind of way. But, you know, I agree that it is, it's a more accessible sound because it's not trying to knock your head off. And it just feels like, I don't know, just kind of this like lively energy, energy to it. And it was interesting to think back about like how different LSEC, how differently LSEC tracks were constructed, because they're so like, they're noisy, but they're also very skeletal, you know, it's like the sheer noise of it. Whereas here it's like this fully developed, like very complex kind of beat pattern or something. And then you kind of dig into the cracks. You get what I mean about like the difference, like the opposites almost?
Yeah. I definitely agree with you.
Well, let's talk, sequencing. A bunch of listeners wrote in to praise the way this entire project is sequenced, and listener Ellen argues that NTS-1 is an especially great example of Booth and Brown's superb sequencing. She points to a few examples, saying the first five compositions center around the marvelous L3 control. Indeed, Debris Funk only makes sense in the context of L3 control, and the nice link between Debris Funk and L3 control is repeated with North Spiral and Gonk Steady 1. She goes so far as to say, I am a fan of NTS, but I do acknowledge that it might not have worked so well were it not for the masterful sequencing. So what do you think about the sequencing on NTS-1? Does it really work like a radio show, as Sean and Rob said?
Well, first I'll agree with the listener. You know, Autechre is so great at sequencing, and I agree that they you know, this wouldn't have worked as well if it wasn't, you know, sequenced to be listenable for such a long period of time. I think they do a good job of each individual one being set up in a good way. You know, I always say this and I never do it. You know, I should listen to these shuffled and see if it's any you know, better or worse or anything, or loses anything.
I mean, I'll say that I tried it on shuffle and I think it falls apart. Like it literally does not work.
Like just one or all four together?
Yeah. No, I just shuffled one. I just shuffled two. Then I shuffled one and two together. I was very, very strict about not, I didn't listen to three and four at all.
Yeah, me neither.
2 weeks.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah, I didn't either. I purposely didn't.
Yeah, I really resisted. It was really hard. But yeah. But yeah, so I tried it all and I swear to God, like it just doesn't work. And like, you'll get like really weird things that just like, it just like lets all the air out of it somehow. Like, I don't know. You just get like a carefree counter dronal into 32A reflected or something. And it just like kills the entire momentum of the mix. I mean, I think it's like amazing actually. So I don't know. I that made me kind of realize, cause I was sort of thinking like while initially listening to this, that like some of the transitions are not really transitions. They're just like hard, immediate cuts right into the next track. You know, there's not like a ton of crossfading on this LSEC in particular, or on this NTS in particular. And I was thinking like with XI, it was that same kind of way. And if you listened on shuffle, actually everything would kind of like transition right into each other beautifully. But here, it totally doesn't. Like it needs to kind of like build an energy over the course of the thing. I was also kind of thinking like, I was thinking about choristess, you know, and there's something about, because I want to sort of address Ellen's comment. Like, do you agree with that it wouldn't, like, actually maybe the songs are a little weaker than we realize because of how good it's sequenced?
You know, I don't think that, like, sequencing, you know, like, just because sequencing is so great, it makes the songs not as good. I think sequencing is, like, a very important part of music. You know, I talk about it pretty much every episode. Like I love the album, you know, as a format, and it's the same way. You know, I always like to do that analogy of you know, you wouldn't just watch part of a movie, but I think it's the same sort of thing with sequencing. You know, you could take your favorite movie, shuffle all the scenes, and now it'll suck. That doesn't mean that like just because you put the scenes in the right order that those scenes aren't as good because they only work in one order, which I understand. That's a little different, you know, because there's a narrative and stuff, but it's the same sort of thing, I think. Like just because, you know, a record is, I mean think of like Sgt. Pepper. If you shuffled the songs of Sgt. Pepper around, I think that record would lose something, but you wouldn't say, oh, the Beatles aren't that great, really. They're just good at sequencing an album, you know. Yeah. I think it's an important part, and it's just, it's one thing I love about Autechre is that they seem to care so much about it. You know, like, I forget which record it was, but they basically you know, were trying to do a data dump kind of thing, and they couldn't like physically do it. They had to, you know, sequence it and stuff still. And I think that's, yeah. I think that's even, we sort of determined, we felt like that's how LSEC was a little bit, and that's why it's split into five and everything. Like they just can't fully let go of it. And I'm kind of glad.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't want to put words in Ellen's mouth. I don't think she was trying to say that like anything's bad here.
No,
like,
I know.
The sequencing disguises it, but I don't know. I get, At first, I thought I agreed with this, in that the sequencing is kind of like lifting stuff up even higher than it would be otherwise on its own, which is what good sequencing does. And it has like this beautiful sequence, I think, of like this kind of slow start into some weirdness, kind of arrives quite naturally at like the purest, funkiest fun of the record, and then kind of settles into this weird territory. Like, it's got a really nice arc. But I started to mention this earlier, but I was thinking about Choristus, and Choristus has this cool quality of like the tracks are so short that if you're not feeling something, like don't sweat it, because it's going to be over in just a second anyway, you know? And this has that same kind of quality just because the project is so huge. Like, if you're not feeling something, like, you don't have to worry about it. And I found myself like, you know, never stressing about the track lengths or anything like that, or feeling like my time was being wasted by anything. But then I started realizing that, like, in contrast to Choristus, and definitely in contrast to LSEC, every single track is like killer. Like, honestly, it's like I'm talking NTS1 specifically, because we'll turn to the rest as we go along, but it's like every track here like fucking kills, and yet it also kind of like takes the heat off because it's so long, you know? Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, it's no. Simultaneously, it doesn't matter if you don't like something because there's so much of it, and yet I like fucking everything.
No, I completely understand what you mean. I mean, because, like, I love every track on this, but I'm not as crazy about BQ, BQ, BQ. I feel like it goes on a little long, you know, maybe overstays its welcome a little bit, but it doesn't really matter, you know, whereas if this was just, you know, a 40-minute record or something, and that track was the same length that it is now, you know, 11 minutes, you know, if it was half the record or something, I think it would, you know, bring it down quite a bit. But 11 minutes out of, you know, 120 isn't that bad, you know, kind of thing. I don't dislike the song. It's just, it's the one that, you know, I got a little bit of a bone to pick with.
I mean, yeah, I guess like a simpler way to say, you know, what I'm trying to say is like, it's just all killer, no filler. Like, it simultaneously has this kind of like data dump quality, or like this mixed bag quality that you want in a double album, or in this case, you know, quadruple album or more. But also there is no filler at all. Like, to me, every song just kills.
No. I agree. There's no song, like NTS1 that I would get rid of, you know, like, at all.
Well, let's start moving into those songs. I want to ask you what your favorites are, but I always like to quiz you on Rate Your Music's individual track rankings, if they're anything like consensus. There's only one track here that is bolded, believe it or not. What do you think it is?
Oh, man, that's weird. You know, just as a little aside, I was going to get the pro Rate Your Music because I wanted to...
Yeah, you're not allowed.
Yeah, I wanted to change my username because it references our like two podcasts ago. But I couldn't. I was like, oh, it'll fuck up our little game, so I can't do it. So I'm stuck. But I think the... Man, I can't believe there's only one. I'll say Gonk Steady One.
That is the only bolded one here, which is kind of shocking to me. But what are your favorite tracks on NTS1?
I mean, I love Gonk Steady One. It's the most, like, you know, dancey thing we've gotten from Ottecker in quite a while, while still being like very experimental, you know, like those skittering sounds are like so crazy. And it just, you know, it's 22 minutes. It's the longest song on this first disc. And it does not like overstay its welcome. Like, I take another 22 minutes of it. It's just, it's just like awesome. It's like the one, like, I wish when COVID's over, I'll go to the club and maybe I'll get Gonk Steady One played.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, honestly, Gonk Steady One is like the only one I feel a little conflicted about, where it's like it's very, very long, and it's kind of directionless in that you just kind of start out with this, like, I don't know, straight up hip hop groove, like absolute banger. There's, you know, this kind of like a weirdly simple, like, I don't know, big kick, like, kind of snare thing going on, like a boom bap thing, which you kind of only realize like at certain points in the track where sounds drop out and it's like just that sort of steady beat. But then, yeah, there's like this absolutely wild, like frantic, hyper, almost untilted style hi-hat like running over the whole thing. And then these kind of like chord bursts, you know, they're just very hip hop, but they sound kind of like, I don't know, like banging on a trash can or something. Like everything about this song has a kind of a junkyard kind of groove.
Autechre does like, stomp.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was like, when I was listening to like L3 Control, I was like, I really want to hear like the New York Philharmonic do this, and I really want to hear the cast of Stomp do the But it's, I don't know, it's weird because it just goes on so long, and like it's one of those things where I'm taking notes while I'm listening, and I'm writing stuff like, oh, now it's changing here. Oh, no, never mind. I went back. Oh, okay. Now this thing is starting to happen. Oh, no, never mind. It changed again. You know, like it doesn't like really move anywhere in 22 minutes. It just like kind of grooves and jams and like flips and re-chops and everything. And I just sort of decided that like it maybe doesn't reward the close listening as much as I would want to hear it in a club, like you were just saying. You know what I mean? It's almost like more bodily. Like it's just such an incredible groove. But maybe gets tiring if you're like zeroing in on every little detail.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I think it would be like a fun club one, because in the club, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, listen to every little thing. I want something that is just sort of like, you know, bodily, you know, where you're feeling it,
yeah.
You know, moving around or whatever. I feel like this song, you know, if they played like songs from records live, like this would be a super, you know, awesome one. Like if they were gonna play something, I would want that one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to knock it. I just feel like that was the one time where I really felt the length on this NTS session and just sort of realizing like maybe I shouldn't be like just dorking it in my headphones here. Maybe I should be like dancing to this one and it would really like kill. I think my favorite track is North Spiral, weirdly. It's like so bouncy. I don't know. There's just like this kind of, it's almost got like a lo-fi quality, like this kind of pummeling, like lo-fi electro kind of thing. And just like this bouncy, like blown out bass or something, like dancing over the top of the thing. I mean, this is like the one where I was like, just feeling like this is like fireworks. Like this is like a Jerry Garcia guitar solo. Or this is like, you know, something like this is just to me, like the epitome of fun Autechre.
Yeah, that's maybe my second favorite track. For basically those same reasons, I love that little like do, like weird bubble, you know,
yeah,
bouncy sound.
It's almost like drunk, like that weird sound. Like it's just like all like woozy and slipping back and forth. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
it's like absolutely hypnotic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that one's fun. I also like L3 Control. Quite a bit. Yeah. It's like that synth is always like struggling to, it's like it's dying or something. It's like just trying to break through, and you know, only can barely do it sometimes. That one's just like a lot of fun.
Yeah, that one is completely insane to me. Like with this, it's basically got like some kind of horror movie like string shit going on,
yeah,
on the top of it. Like some like something like absolutely terrifying about it, and it's just like so piercing and shrill, these strings. And I don't know, it's such a like strange mixture over this track, but I just like, I don't know, it's got like this great kind of I don't know, like almost techno-y blippy kind of groove to it, like real kind of like pummeling, like there's almost an acid energy at points, and even kind of like acidy kind of garbled grooves come in like later in the track. But just adding on top of that, like the shrillest, most avant-garde string thing. There's actually a lot of the tracks here, they kind of like add like pad-like melody or like kind of glassy drones and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it'll be so dissonant. It is like, you know, we'll talk about it more because we got some listener emails, but like BQ, it's like this weird, cute melody. And then this absolutely haunted like organ drone joins it. And I'm like, why am I getting scared? Like I was like having, I thought that was like a cute little robot I was listening to or something. And now I'm scared of this thing. Like it's bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I think that's one reason I like this, record in particular so much though, is because there's always like something else, you know, another layered appeal or you know, to find, yeah, there. Cause you're right. You know, BQ on first listen or, not even deep listening, it does sound like this cute little thing, but then, you know, there's some, you know, sinisterness behind it.
Yeah, There are a bunch more I want to talk about, but I think our listeners brought up a lot of them, so we'll get to that. Listener Jeff says that his NTS1 highlights are L3 Control, North Spiral, Gonk Steady 1, and 4 of 7, and we got a lot of praise for those first three in particular. Listener Joe shared little write-ups on every single track. I wish we had time to read all of them in full here, but here are a few select comments. Quote, there are certain moments that make NTS feel like a journey through space, and that eerie alien bell pads at the beginning of L3 Control that come in and out throughout the track is one of my absolute favorites. The beat is one of the absolute strangest in all of their discography. You guys throw around the term banger a lot, and I don't think there's a song in the discography that deserves the word more than North Spiral. I agree with that. And when we get Gonk Steady 1, and then we get to Gonk Steady 1. I have nothing to say beyond what I'm sure everyone else is going to say about how much of an incredible, mind-blowing, journey-of-a-lifetime highlight of electronic music it is. Any thoughts we didn't mention on any of these consensus highlights?
No, I pretty much agree with the listener there. Those were a lot of the ones I picked. 4-7 is good. I don't know that I would say it's like a absolute highlight. You know, that'll be my disagree here.
That's one I really like a lot. It's like weird because it's got a very like almost throwback to the artificial intelligence vibes kind of thing. It's like the most like quote electronic music sounding track here, and I don't know. I just really like that, like, big, there's like a big bass glug and like these kind of like twiddling little arpeggios and lots of like knob twiddling energy on this thing. And I don't know. It's just like absolutely transfixing for me. And I love how this is one of those few times where it like, it kind of gets like more like reverb added on all like the blipping and the twiddling and stuff, and gets like spacier and like more cosmic and even psychedelic, and then it sort of turns into like almost a preview of 32A Reflected, mm-hmm. and that it gets like very droney and spacey and weird at the end. I mean, I don't know why, I just like adore and like almost kind of miss that approach. Like, it reminded me of something off Amber a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I was gonna say that, you know, 4-7 I think is like an example of like how good the sequencing is here, because it's a perfect like bridge between Gonk Steady 1 and 32A Reflected. You know, it's bringing you down. It's not quite like, you know, it's not a drone track or anything, but you know, it's got a beat to it, but it's definitely like calmer than Gonk Steady. And then, you know, it morphs into this, you know, much more ambient, you know, spacious like thing. And then flows right into 32A Reflected, you know, especially like when you listen on the vinyl, it's sort of hard to tell like when, you know, where one begins and one ends.
Yeah, I think it's like it's quite a feat, I think, because after Gonk Steady 1, you're like, well, how do you follow mm-hmm. that? And then if you thought, like, if you had never heard 4 of 7 and you were like, all right, in one song, we have to get from Gonk Steady 1 into 32A Reflected, it would be hard to think of a more perfect way to kind of do that. And it just nails it. So you kind of already started talking about it, but is there anything you don't like here? And I guess I could quiz you, but the answer may be obvious. What do you think is the lowest rated track?
Yeah, I think it's the one that I'll say BQ, BQ, BQ.
All right, well, why don't you like it so much?
It's just, I think we've even mentioned it before as we've talked about like Ottecker, you know, sort of has like this humor to it. And, the, you know, that's sort of always my go-to one. I remember when listening to this, you know, live for the first time, everyone being like, what the fuck is happening? Yeah. Not in like a bad way, just like what did we go, you know, from this first track into this? Like it's so different. It's so different from basically any other Ottecker, which I appreciate. I mean, the time to do something completely different is when you're making an 8-hour record, you know? Like, you know, try something new. It would be boring if we just got, you know, 8 hours of Gonk Steady 1 or something. It's just, I think it overstays its welcome. It's 11 minutes. I think if it was like 5 minutes, I think I would like it a lot. It's just, I feel like every time I would listen to this record, you know, that would come on. I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is fun. You know, what a cute little robot we've got going here. And then, you know, you do some work or so, you look up and you're like, oh, we're still with the robot. You know, it's just like, I just think it overstays its welcome. But again, I mean, like you mentioned, in such like a huge project, it's not a big deal. I still, and I like the song. It's just, it's my least favorite here. And then I don't know, everything else on this record, I like really wouldn't complain about at all. Like I really think almost everything else is like an absolute highlight of Autechre.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I was kind of trying to say earlier, is that it's because the project is so long, like there's just no pressure, I feel like, on even tracks. Like I like them more because I don't feel offended that I don't like them. Yeah. Like in a weird paradoxical way. And yet I mentioned feeling like everything kind of kills here, and I kind of feel like BQ kills as well. Like just I always thought it was kind of like goofy, and then honestly it was like these past 2 weeks that it sort of like clicked for me, because it does have that weird like kind of baby robot like chiptune thing. I was kind of thinking like this sounds like one of those like kind of shitty like Tom York laptop experiments, you know?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
He is releasing. And so it's like, I don't know, I always kind of felt like it was like a little below, like beneath Autechre or something like that. But then, like I was saying earlier, if you listen to those details, like those absolutely strange, like frighteningly serious, like haunting strings and stuff, that sort of like these drones that sort of like emerge underneath, almost becomes like this kind of weird, like, I don't know, like lone cello quality by the end or something. It feels like it is deliberately clashing with the cuteness of that main like kind of beat melody thing, and it almost starts to like swallow that thing. And I don't know, it just has like this weird quality of like almost two totally different vibes like duking it out, and like the haunting, menacing thing winning out at the end. And so I started to kind of feel like this was one of those like non-jammy tracks, like one of those very carefully composed tracks where when it starts I'm like, okay, we're doing this, but then I can't wait like to get to like the weirdness of the ending, you know? It's like such a payoff for me.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, that's definitely weirdly enough, like the sort of most annoying track on the record is the one that really does give you, you know, is good for deep listening. Yeah.
Well, we definitely received some comments on like some of the less loved tracks here. Listener Jeff says, I'm one of the many who find BQ to be mostly just annoying and I skip it each time. I still don't know how to feel about Carefree Counter Dronal, with its sounds being almost that of a skipping CD. I have a hard time with it. It seems to trigger anxiety in me from remembering hearing something like that as the death knell from my younger CD listening days. This is what I was trying to talk about with Veco S on XI. Like, it triggers me like my laptop fan going crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
just wanted to bring that up. On the other hand, listener Joe says, people's dismissal of BQ has never made any sense to me. At first, it sounds like a chorus to see goofy track, but there's so much going on and it's endlessly interesting to listen to. I think that's what I was trying to articulate. He also says, I remember that on the Oversteps episode, you guys complained that RS took too long to actually get going, and I'm curious to hear if you feel the same way about T1A1. I used to dismiss it as too plodding and static to justify its length, but I think part of that came from not listening to it close enough for the first few times I went through the sessions. Now, like most of the other songs, I can either casually sit back and enjoy the atmosphere or pay close attention to all the small details, like the cats, and either way, I'm suddenly shocked that it's gone by so quickly. So let's start with, you know, we talked plenty of BQ, but T1A1, you know, and just you sort of alluded to it, but I've seen quite a bit of hate, like even beyond our emails, for like this kind of weird start to the project. But what do you think about like that opening track in particular?
You know, I like the song, you know, once it starts, but it is like such a weird way to get into this. You know,
yeah.
Broadcast, you know, I could see like, oh, a quick fade, you know, a 5 second fade in or something, but it's a good, like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's a good, like, 10, 15 second or more. It's
and then there's like a minute and a half of like this weird, like vroom, like this
yeah,
low volume vroom thing.
It's maybe not the best way to start out your 8 hour broadcast. Like, honestly, if you got rid of that fade in and you switched BQ in that around, I think it would work a bit better. I do agree with the listeners though. Like it rewards the deep listening. You know, those cat sounds, somebody sent a email about it, and then, you know, I saw some stuff on like the R Autechre about it. I had never noticed that before.
I still can't find it.
Oh, you can't?
I couldn't find
it. Oh, someone on the R Autechre like made a thread like kind of directed at us, and in that someone like said exactly what time. I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was 2:55 or 2:25, something like that.
Okay,
but look at the thread.
Yeah,
because when you have it pointed out to you. It's like pretty obvious. I was thinking what they were saying at first was like in that buildup, like, you know, like a cat was in the room and it's like, oh, that was supposed to be there. You know, like how my cat's always fucking in the background of this podcast. But no, it's like, it's hard to tell if it's like a sample of an actual cat or if it's just like a synth sound that happens to sound like a cat.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty like funny actually once you hear it. And then once you hear it, it's one of those like you can't unhear it things.
Yeah.
But I
mean, I'll say that I adore this track, like just in general. I think it's like, I know it's kind of divisive because it is so slow and plodding, but it's like, for one, I think that's like a kind of a funny trick. Honestly, like the silence at the beginning and the like weird slow low volume vroom doesn't bother me either, because it's also a weird trick where you'd kind of be like, I don't know, they were just like being like real pranksters on this whole album, you know, and like the whole rollout and everything, because it's just like probably people were thinking like, did something mess up? Is it not starting? Why is it so quiet, you know? And then in comes this beat and then you're just kind of like, whoa, this is heavy, like this is gonna take off, and it like never does. And it's, there's something about like the staying slow for 20 minutes thing that is like, it's like the most unexpected thing. And then my favorite part of this track and one of my favorite parts of the whole sessions is like the shift that happens about 13 minutes into this track, where like all of a sudden like all the low end gets sucked out of the beat and it becomes like this kind of light pitter patter and this like sort of pretty like, I don't know, something like kind of hollow about it, like this cheap organ sound starts like actually adding chords to the thing. And this like kind of low end bass wub just like adds like an extra absolute groove to the like really straightforward beat. It's like a payoff in the sense we were talking about with BQ, but it's like the most unexpected payoff you could imagine. Cause it's like, how is this like huge lurching heavy thing going to take off? And then the way it takes off is by like really pulling way back and just getting like kind of pretty.
Yeah. And I do remember, you know, the first time listening to this, you know, live, it being eight, you know, it's 18 minutes, just being like, how long, you know, it has that like, how long is this gonna go on kind of thing, you know? Like it in a good way. It was, because I mean at that point we still didn't know if it was gonna be mixes or what. I mean, when something had been going on for, you know, 10-15 minutes, it was pretty sure sign it was an Odd Tucker track. But you know, I mean, who knows after that, maybe, you know, would have been something not new, right, you know, right. or whatever. So it was like kind of a, you're right, if you look at it like in the way it was originally like presented, it probably does work better.
Yeah, and it's almost like a you know, sometimes people accuse them, I think you alluded to this earlier, of like just stretching out to fill 2 hours, and it almost feels like just a taunting those people, like, you want to hear us stretch out, like here you go, 20 minutes of like the same beat, you know. But like I said, like there are just so many little details. And like listener Joe said, like there are just so many little details to hear in this thing. I mean, I absolutely love it. I won't stand for any T1, A1 slander from anybody. What do you think about, Joe kind of makes this larger claim in his email, and he kind of alluded to it here, that like a lot of the NTS sessions works like a radio show in the sense that you don't always have to be zoned in on it. You know, like you can kind of tune out and it's almost okay. Like the track lengths of something like T1A1 is like, you don't have to focus so deep, like just let the groove hit you, you know what I mean? Does it work like that for you?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, that's got to be intentional, because I you know, it's a, you can't expect someone to pay attention, you know, 2 straight hours, you know, 4 times. So yeah, definitely. I think that's exactly, I mean, that's how I listened to it over, you know, these past couple weeks. I mean, you know, reading or at work and stuff. I basically was, I don't think I ever sat in just for 2 hours, you know, listened to the whole thing. I just sort of like would do it to a song here and there, you know?
Yeah, and I think like that's part of my favorite, one of my favorite things about the NTS sessions and NTS1 in particular, of course, is like that kind of quality of like just listening kind of passively and then things like pulling your attention. You know, same way like when a song changes on the radio and it's like good or something, and you kind of like, you know, like on Gonk Steady 1, like there's a point where everything kind of drops out and it's just like that kind of chord burst sound is like now pitched lower. It's like about 8 minutes in, and it just always makes me like kind of turn my head like, whoa, what's that now, you know? Like I sort of zoned out and I was just kind of feeling it, but
again.
yeah it kind of like snaps me back. I love like that kind of the playfulness of that. It does work like a radio show for me. What about Carefree Counter Drone Hall? Also not that well rated on Rate Your Music. And the only, you know, what you could call interlude-y track here. We heard from some who dislike it and others who think it's really essential to the sequencing, but I didn't see like a ton of love for it on its own. What do you think about that one?
I think it's not the most like essential track, but I do like it. I think it's cool. It's like a digital like sort of disintegration.
Very Baczynski, I thought, like the way it's exactly, like it's glitching like, out of existence.
It's like glitching, and like the little pieces you hear like almost sound like, you know, like regular, you know, pretty music. Like disintegration tapes is like, you know, these symphonic kind of thing. It feels the same way, just like a digital version of that. Different from something like Oval or, you know, like 94 disconnect, whatever. It's like different from that, but a similar like sort of thing. I thought it was like an interesting little experiment. I think it's a good place like in the record for it. It's in the middle. It's only 5 minutes. It's like a little breather. I feel like some of the like skittering sound of it like sort of reminds me of the skittering we hear in like Gonk Steady One. So I think it's like a good, like it calls back to it and stuff. I think if anything's going to be a, you know, interlude-y kind of thing, I think it like, you know, a lot of interludes on records like are just, oh, you could completely skip that or do away with it. I think they at least like, one, it's interesting. And two, I think there's like a little bit of a callback to it that like makes it worthwhile, especially in a 2 hour, you know, chunk.
Yeah, I mean, I think it works on both levels. Like, you need that kind of breather because L3 Control is, like, kind of the climax of, I think, that first hour. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we need to kind of reset a little bit and build back up to Gonk Steady 1. But it also, I think, is just amazing on its own. I mean, I love the kind of, like, weird clipping quality of, like, what you can tell is a very pretty, lush chord. And then there are a couple times where it, like, holds it, you know, a millisecond longer. And you can hear, like, just how huge and lush and, like, amazing whatever this chord must be. And then as it kind of goes on, like the clips get kind of shorter and farther apart in like almost a Baczynski way. And I will say that I don't know why, I cannot explain this, but my wife, who hates Autechre, announced that she actually likes this song and it's her favorite Autechre song she's ever heard.
She made a comment on our Venmo thing the other day and I about Autechre sucking, and I said, you're gonna gonk one day. She's gonking.
She's gonking to Carefree Counter Dronal, of all things. So listener Marco complained that tracks like BQ and 32A Reflected are too, quote, gimmicky. What do you think about that? And, you know, what do you think about the closer of this session in general? I guess we should mention that it's like constructed from what, like two pieces, one's playing in reverse, right?
Yeah, it's like the one channel is played in forwards and the other channels play back, you know, so if you reversed it, it would switch what years it's in. I think it took a couple days before anyone realized that. It's not that gimmicky. I always, you know, it's sort of like process kind of music. I feel like, you know, it's that sort of thing that like, you know, Steve Reich or John Cage or something, where like the process of making the, you know, sound is part of it and part of what's like interesting with it. You know, we've mentioned it with other Autechre stuff before. It's like pendulum music. Like if you just listen to that and you don't know how it's made, I mean, it sounds cool, but it's not like something you want to,
but know. You think this is like the same thing as that? Because I feel like you don't even have to worry about that. Like you don't even, like if you don't know, like it's not going to matter at all to this piece. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. I'm just talking about like the, you know, once you know, like, oh, is it gimmicky? Yeah. But I don't think it's gimmicky. I think it's gimmicky in the way that, like, you know, pendulum music is gimmicky. Whereas, like, pendulum music isn't, like, that nice to just listen to without knowing that. I think 32A Reflected, like, is pretty nice. You know, it's just sort of, like, a calm, you know, drone-y sort of thing to take you out of this two-hour session. I think it like works perfectly where it is in the record. Like we talked about, like Gonk Steady 1, you're dancing hard, you know, for 20, 25 minutes. And then, you know, 4 or 7's taking you down. And then 32A, you know, you're going to sleep or something, you know, like you're drifting off. I think it's another great, you know, sequencing move from them.
Yeah. I think it's like an amazing closer. It's also quite short, you know, unlike the closer of the next session we'll talk about. But it's just like, I don't think you need to know that process because it's just kind of interesting. You can hear that it's like, there's like a weird stillness to the kind of like electroacoustic style kind of droning, metallic sounding droning that's going on. But you can hear that like some things are moving in reverse or something, and you can't really figure out why it sounds like just completely still, but also backwards at the same time. And then there's kind of like this weird kind of crashes of rattling noise that are like very electroacoustic or almost like dub music, you know, when they do like the delays that are like really high pitch and it's like just trickling off and
yeah,
stuff.
I was thinking that, and because of that, I listened to Super Ape last night after 33A. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just like a lovely glittering kind of cool down, I think, at the end of this thing, and sort of a weird, like, I don't know, almost like a field recording quality to it. Like some of the sounds here, like maybe think of like cicadas or something, or just like being outside. It's like, I don't know, just very peaceful.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, we managed to talk about every track here, which I am really attempting to do on these episodes. So how would you sum up your feelings on NTS-1? Maybe we can't answer this until we've finished the whole set, but do you think it's fair that NTS-1 is the lowest rated on Radio Music?
Yeah, I guess it's hard to answer it before we, you know, do them all. Because like you, I specifically only listened to 1 and 2 these 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I don't think it, you know, I don't think it's fair that it's the lowest rated, you know, just going off memory. I don't see any like faults with it, you know, besides BQ, you know, I get like people's dislike of that, you know, a little bit, but I think even that it's not enough to warrant, you know, a 3.4, you know, a sub 3.5 here. You know, I like this record a lot. I mean, if this was the only thing, you know, We didn't have three other NTS sessions. This was just a record on its own. I think I'd be happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like I said, every song is a banger, and I'm just realizing that the one track we didn't talk about is Debris Funk, which is also a banger. I mean, great, like, kind of, like, weird noise bombs and, like, kind of, it almost sounds like an extended drum solo or something. Actually, this whole, like, NTS session has, like, a nice, like, emphasis on these kind of start-stop kind of patterns, you know, and then there's like all this empty space for weird explosions of sound or something. Like it's like interesting how it kind of clears it out in the middle of the groove so that you can hear all this craziness. But yeah, another banger. I mean, I just think everything like absolutely kills here. I get that maybe it's like, I get that it might be like the most straightforward, as Sean and Rob said, of the NTS sessions, and kind of like the most fun, and I was going to use the word carefree, but I guess that's just because it's in the title of one of the songs. But, you know, it's like, I guess maybe if you're like a serious experimental music person, it might not be your favorite NTS session. So I can appreciate that, but it's just banger after banger. I mean, it's like an absolutely amazing time, like just such an amazing time. But we should keep it moving on to NTS-2. How would you describe the sound palette and style of this installment, and is it distinct from NTS-1? On the note of straightforward, do you agree that with Sean and Rob that this is like the quote deep plunge after NTS-1?
Yeah, I think that this one definitely is like less straightforward than the first one. I mean, it's like you just said, you know, if people want to complain, you know, it's the normal record, NTS-1, you know, 2, I think definitely does like take a different, you know, plunge there. You know, we're getting a little more out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot more abrasive, like a lot noisier. It's less groovy on the whole and like more like, I want to say like more sinister, even like, like just not as much fun and just like more of this like weird, sinister, dark energy or something. And like lots of strange noisiness, lots of emphasis on that, like kind of abrasive sound design. And you know, we'll talk about this, but kind of makes this pretty clear move toward like something kind of spacier and like, I hesitate to use the word ambient, but it just like, I think what's so fascinating about this record is how fast it feels like it's moving when you're coming off of NTS-1, because the shorter track length, especially in the first half, and you just feel like you're flying through it, and then it just kind of like settles into this like really strange, like kind of drifting territory. I mean, much different from the experience of like building up to the, you know, party that is Gong Steady One, you know?
Yeah, it definitely has a different flow to it. Still, I think, you know, perfectly sequenced, but yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you start out with the first track, ELYC9, you know, whatever, And it's, I think it's just like immediately more of a, you know, sinister and sound designy, you know, kind of thing, you know, it's
and like a challenge to you. Like, yeah, it's like
exactly
tough listening actually right out of the gate.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, T1A1 is, you know, it's plotting and it goes on for a long time, but it's not exactly like a difficult song outside of it, you know, its length.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, you're right. You know, with EL, you know, the first track here, we're getting, we're going straight, you know, it's right into the deep end.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of this is, like more deliberately kind of challenging or like provocative to the listener almost. Like it's sort of punishing, but like different in interesting ways. I just want to note the listener Colin wrote in to say that NTS2 has pretty much the perfect sequencing for an Autechre album and the rest close behind it. We started talking about this, but you know, do you like that it kind of, do you agree with me? You know, it feels like it's like moving so fast and then it like almost comes to a standstill.
Yeah, I think it's a good, you know, today I listened to NTS1 and then directly into 2, and you know, it was even though that was maybe not the intended, you know, listening thing, like Sean said in that thing we read at the beginning, like they really did mean it where you could listen to, you know, the whole thing at once if you wanted. I think it was like sort of refreshing for it to move a little bit, you know, even though we've only got three extra tracks here. But yeah, I mean, you get through so many more at that, you know, it's stacked where the you know, a lot of the smaller tracks are up front, and so you really kind of feel like you're flying through it.
Yeah, and like relatively speaking, because they are still like longer than your average song.
10 minutes is the first one.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's just like an amazing sequencing feat, honestly, just in the way that it kind of like moves, settles into this strange territory, almost kind of following like the template that all of LSEC did, you know, kind of moving from like the most abrasive into like the most ambient kind of territory. I think it takes a very different route, but it does that perfectly, I think. You know, a lot of the generalities and stuff I think we discussed earlier apply to NTS2 as well, so we should just jump right into the tracks and maybe zoom out from there. What are your favorite tracks here and why? I should quiz you. I almost forgot. Only one track is bolded. What do you think it is?
Again, only one. It's much harder on this one.
Yeah.
I'll say Gonk Tough High. Everyone loves the Gonk.
It is actually X Flood.
Okay.
But what are your favorites?
Well, mine's X Flood, and I always just pick. Okay. I always just pick my favorite in that game, and it seems not to work often. Didn't do it this time, but I love that song. It's like there's that like weird like high whistling like whoop whoop whoop, whoop, yeah, you know, thing that happens. Yeah. It's like so you know, like kind of joyful, and then but the background is pretty you know, sinister, and the whole time we've got this just like ethereal whooshing is like slowly building and building and building until it like takes over. That's just like so awesome, you know.
Yeah, I think the song is like absolutely cursed. Like it is an evil song. Yeah. It is like that weird cute whistling you mentioned. It also has kind of like a weird squeaky like feedbacking quality, and I feel like this is kind of a consistent theme on this record in particular. There's a lot of like what I would describe as feedback, and what I would also compare to like machinery, like kind of squeaking and you know, rattling and stuff like that. I mean, there's just like a big emphasis on the sounds of machinery. So what's fascinating about X Flood is like it does sound like this weird mechanical space, and you know, there's even a part where there's just lots of like the grinding like really builds up, and there's like weird flopping sounds. Like I jotted down like it sounds like something got caught in whatever fucking machine this is, you know. And it's like totally getting screwed up, but on top of that is like something like a choir, like an evil, like straight out of hell choir, like from an avant-garde opera from like the 20s or something like that, is just like, I don't know, like gloriously like rising over this entire machine. I mean, that contrast is insane. But do you agree that there's like a real mechanical quality to a lot of the tracks here?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, like it really has like a industrial sound. Not again, we always have to clarify this, not like industrial music, but like literally, you know, machinery.
Yeah. And interesting to just, I don't know, hear them come back to that, because I feel like they were kind of associated with that back in the Tri-Repete days, mm-hmm.
and
it, dabble in it here and there, but it becomes like really prominent on a lot of the tracks here. My favorites, I feel like, I got to say, I never know how to say this, Volvoik, is a monster. Like, this is like, you know, if you want to talk about physical modeling, I'm not even 100% sure that I understand what that word means. But if it means what I think it does, which is like using electronic synthesis to create what sounds like a physical sound, like in the world, this is the peak. Like, just pack it up and go home, anybody else who's doing physical modeling, because this is like the end of it, where the whole thing sounds like it's structured around some like gigantic spring, you know, like factory size spring, and it's like tight at first, you know, or something. So it's kind of like this high, like rattling and shaking and everything. And then, you know, it kind of like the whole track is like this long, like it just feels like this huge buildup or something, where it's just like that, like spring is just getting like hit on the one of every beat. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, I'm talking about the last 2 minutes where the thing just goes like something shakes loose and the thing like drops down a couple octaves. It's just like, boom, 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 boom. It's like unbelievable. I think my other favorite track here is EO, which, if everything else here sounded kind of like machinery, EO sounds like, I don't know, I wrote down like dinnerware vibes or something. There's just lots of like tinkling and like weird clanking, like kind of bell sounds. And then this like ridiculously fat, like rubbery kind of bass groove over the whole thing. I mean, the weirdest, spaciest ambience. I think those are my two favorites. What do you think about those two?
Yeah, I definitely love Volvoik. You're right. Like it is like a great example of a physical modeling with like making that spring kind of thing. It just that like gurgling, you know, bass like sound that comes from and stuff. It's like the whole thing gets like real spooky. And then the EO. Yeah, I like that one. It's you know, pretty sort of like ambient feeling. But I think, you know, it's a good place in the record, you know, for it, but kind of weirdly after the two like shortest tracks on I think the entire sessions, you know, in whole. But it's a good wind down.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, it's just got like a fascinating stillness. This is like the kind of track that I would be happy listening to for like an hour straight or something, because I just want to like live in this weird sound world. You know, as far as our listeners go, there was maybe a little bit less consensus on NTS2 standouts, as you kind of mentioned, but listener Jeff calls X-Flood, Volvoik, EO, and Nine Crow his favorites. Listener Ellen highlights X-Flood with what sounds like a choir, Gonk Tough High, and Dummy Casual Part 2 for being both weird and catchy. Volvoik, which she calls another classic Autechre piece that starts off structured and ordered, but then spends quite a bit of time slowly breaking down, and that breakdown is so fascinating. And the wonderfully claustrophobic Nine Crow. Listener Peter wrote in just to praise Volvoik, which he calls something I hesitate to call a song, as it's something that's absorbed more than listened to. When I'm walking around listening to this on headphones, those deep rippling grooves feel like they make the entire world vibrate. It's more like being in a sound art installation that would be in a museum rather than just some track on an album. I can't think of any other track where the sound seemed to have so much physical mass. This is heavy in a way music rarely ever is. It's my favorite thing by Autechre, or possibly anyone. I mean, we've talked about it, I think, enough already, but I just want to mention, we were talking about on AE Live about how you feel like the bass is supposed to be hitting you in the gut and like shaking your body. Mm-hmm. And you just aren't going to get that in the headphone listening experience. Somehow this Volvoik track, I feel like my gut is shaking when I'm listening in headphones. You know what I mean? Like, it accomplished that.
Yeah, it really does. Like, I mean, AE Live, you know, was like mixed to literally be in a room. But yeah, it is such like a mastery of production to they give you that sort of like feeling without like using the physical, you know. It's sort of easy to do it in a physical space, like you're literally pushing air into someone, but to like make it feel like air's being pushed at you is a whole like different thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think just like this is like on the Mount Rushmore of Autechre for me. I'm looking for other ones that these listeners mentioned as highlights that we didn't talk about. I mean, Nine Crow is pretty fascinating because it's like, It's kind of a groove. It's like this weird, like really garbled groove with like, again, with that kind of like feedback squealing, but it's like very low here and just has this kind of like shredded noise quality to it. I mean, it's almost like Volvoic-ish a little bit, but it's interesting because it feels like by this point in the record, like things have come to a standstill and it's like this final stand of the groove, you know?
Yeah. I like Nine Crow a bit. It is like the you know, one of the more groovy, you know, tracks on this record, but it's still like strange. You know, the one listener called it like claustrophobic. I think that's a good like description for it. But yeah, I don't know. It's such a cool track. Like last night I was listening in it like on the records, and it you know, I was reading and it like really sort of like grabbed my attention, you know, it made me want to like pay attention to it. You know, it just like really comes out.
Yeah. It snaps you back in. Like when you could get lost, I think by the sort of ambience of this latter half,
especially coming off of a Peel Ma, the one before, yeah. Which I guess I'll save it for when we get to the tracks that we don't love, but
yeah. I want to return to some of these like weirder, like interlude-y type pieces. But I did want to mention that Joe says he's quote torn over whether or not Volvoic would have fit on LSAC. Is there something I can't quite put my finger on that makes it sound a bit different to me? Several emailers mentioned like more abrasive tracks, particularly on this NTS session, that they think would have fit on LSAC. But does anything sound particularly LSAC-y to you? And, you know, we were talking about how different NTS-1 is from LSAC. Does this feel more like LSAC or still totally different?
You know, I think this one, I get like what the listener's saying, like, you know, there's some more like LSAC-esque, you know, tracks here, like Voivik. But I still feel like it's a different palette or just like, you know, it's a matured sound or something. Like it doesn't feel like, you know, they're just leftovers from that, even though, you know, I think Rob and Sean said, you know, some of the tracks like kind of are from that era. There's no track I feel like I could take exactly how it is and how it's mixed on NTS2 and put it straight into LSAC. You know, it's just like there's a different like production to LSAC and NTS, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can't quite put my finger on it, but yeah, I agree that like it sounds closer to LSAC maybe, and at some points like even closer to AE Live sort of. Like I feel like some of the sort of chiming on EO, like the metallic chiming, feels like some of those come down moments, mm-hmm. those rare come down moments on AE Live. And yeah, the like more abrasive, almost mechanical, like grinding on stuff like Volvoic feels LSAC-y. I mean, Elec 9 7 hours or whatever that is clearly like a reference to the track on LSAC, so it might come, you know, share some of the same DNA, even though I can't totally hear it. But I don't know, there's just a different emphasis. Like you think about like X Flood, it's like all this like grinding mechanical noise or something, and then like we said, this insane choir. Like that's something you would just never hear, I think, on LSAC, which had just like a more like much more like narrow kind of sound palette. Here there's just like such a wild diversity of sounds that even when it leans more toward the abrasive, there's still so much more to it, I think. I want to return to what we were talking about with BQ just for a second, since listener Colin wrote in to praise the sense of humor he hears on the NTS sessions as a whole. He highlights BQ, but also, quote, the iPhone notification sound in Dummy Casual Part 2 and the gonky silliness of Gonk Tough High. I know you're not an iPhone user, but did you notice that?
No, but I don't think I know what that sound is off the top of my head. I've always had an Android. My wife has an iPhone, but she keeps it on silent, so I don't think I've ever heard it.
Yeah, I don't know. I never, until we got this email, I never thought about it, and now I can't unhear it, like you're saying with the cat thing. I mean, it's like toward the end of Dummy Casual, there's like, I like to think that they were recording and like, Sean was just like messaging somebody or something, because it's just like the sound of when you send an iMessage, like whoosh, like when it's been sent off or something. So I don't know. It could be the fact that it just in Max MSP, they fucked around with it so much that they came up with a sound that is very similar to that. Or they literally thought it would be funny to record. I don't know what the deal is, but it's like, I don't know. It kind of delights me in some way. But do you hear that sense of humor on these first two sessions?
Definitely on the first one, you know, with BQ and stuff, and like you said, maybe with T1A1, like the you know, taking so long to get started is maybe a little bit of a trick. But you know, like the listener said, you know, gonk tough high here. You know, there is like that sort of like noise on it. It's like a horn. It sort of like sounds like a robot saying gonk. You know, if
yeah,
you like really
I,
think
I
about
wrote
it.
Down. I wrote down a duck quack was my description of it.
Like in Star Wars, there's like a droid that looks like a trash can, and it's called a gonk droid, and they call it that because it walks around and goes gonk 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 gonk. It's like when the Jawas pick up C-3PO and R2-D2. And I wonder, like, is that a reference? It's weird that they would use the same, you know, like. Same kind of word, and in that it like it sort of sounds similar to like a robot saying gonk, and that does seem a little funny.
I think of it like the on the Gonk Steady One, like that kind of noise, that like chord blast thing. It's like very hip hop chopped. I've always thought of that is the gonk, and then on this track it's like pitched up so high that it sounds more like a quack or something, but that's still the gonk. Like that's just my theory, but yeah, I've always thought of it as that's the gonk sound. But yeah, I mean, this track is kind of like, it's kind of fun and playful in a way that much more of NTS-1 is, I think. It's like, I wrote down like a haunted lava lamp is my description of this one. It's very like bubbly and gurgly. And there are parts where like this kind of like 16th note pummel kind of like comes in, and it becomes like an absolute groove, like an absolute banger just for like short little moments. But for the most part, it's like quite blippy and strange. There's something like real groovy and kind of cool about 6 of 8 mitts. That's like, you know, it's got this, similar kind of junkyard, you know, drum beat kind of thing to it, like a clink clonk kind of thing. And, you know, it gets a little more haunting and scary and sinister toward the end, but there's a touch of that fun, I think, on NTS2, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Ottaker ever, like, you know, fully loses the fun, you know, on any record.
But Elsec, I thought, was, like, so serious, honestly.
Elsec's definitely, you know, much more serious here. But, you know, like, a lot of electronic or experimental music, I think, like, gets a reputation for being, like, humorless and you know, funless and everything, and I never really feel like that with Ottaker. You know, while they definitely like have some tracks that like verge on it, I think like as a whole, you know, they're definitely like still fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, you started to get into this, but I want to talk about your least favorite tracks here. First, I'll quiz you, and it should be a very easy quiz again. But what do you think are the three lowest rated tracks here?
Sinistrail AB Air.
Yep.
Wet Gellis.
Yep.
And POMA.
Yeah, got it.
Nice.
Nailed it. What are your least favorites?
Sinistral AB. Basically those same as POMA. I did really kind of dislike. It just like has so much kind of just silence in it. It like really,
yeah.
It kind of like stops the flow of everything, you know, like we just,
yeah,
sort of like hit little moments of brick walls. It even sort of like starts like so quietly. Like last night I said I was listening to the records, and that's the first song on a side of a disc, and I like put it on. I went back, I was reading, I had it, you know, sort of low because my wife was sleeping, and I was like, oh, did I hit the off button? Like on the amp, you know, or something. Like I had to like get, I got back up and checked, and I was like, oh yeah, no, that's the quiet song. It just sort of like really sort of messes the flow up. As for those other two, you know, Sinistrail and Wet Gellis, I don't think they're like bad pieces, you know, on their own or anything. It's just like, it's kind of a weird move to stick them back to back. It's the one like sort of thing in the sequencing that feels a little like haphazard, or something, you know, like it's just the two and a half minute tracks, you know, stuck here, you know. I don't know. They don't seem to like add much. They're the only things that like sort of feel like interludes.
My theory is that, you know, I thought that as well. Like, it's weird that they're back to back, and my, what I basically decided is that Sinistral AB Air really does sound like air. You know, it's just kind of like this whooshing mm-hmm. and like some really light scrambled sounds. But I just started to think of it as like the steam coming off of whatever machine was going fucking haywire in Volvoik. You know, it's like almost like the perfect cool down after that like absolute insanity, especially of the last 2 minutes of that track. You need it, and it really fits the mood, I think. And then Wet Gelis is honestly like a stunning, I think, intro to EO, which, you know, maybe I'm a little more hot on that than you are, but I mean, I just love EO, and I think the transition from Wet Gelis into EO is like perfect. And so I wouldn't change a thing about this, because I honestly feel like one works as the cool down and the next one works as the rev up to EO. PLMA, it's weird. Yeah, there's a lot of silence for sure. It's almost just like a, I don't want to use the word half-assed, but like something like an electroacoustic experiment that just like wasn't fully, you know, developed or yeah. something. But I do kind of admire, and we talked about the flow and the sequencing of this record. I do kind of love that it comes to a total standstill before Nine Crow crashes in. Like Nine Crow hits 10 times harder because it follows PLMA, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it does like sort of, Nine Crow does a good job of like getting the party, you know, back started. what you said about Sinistral and Wet Gelis, I think is fairly accurate too. You know,
the vinyl might be fucking all this up. You know, this is just like me listening to the digital version.
I'm not looking at the vinyl tracklist, but just looking at the times, I think it is Sinistral, Wet Gelis, EO on one side. Yeah, it has to be because PLMA is the beginning of a disc. So it's got to be. I do wonder, is Wet Gelis a reference to Van Gelis, you think?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what that
it
means.
It doesn't sound like a real, I was, you know, thinking like, oh, is it a real like Van Gelis-y sounding track or anything? But it really isn't. But
it sounds honestly like when, you know, cause we do like experimental music and sometimes like you're just plugging shit in and stuff isn't plugged in right. And there's just like kind of weird fumbling, like a little, like it just sounds like something like they were just plugging stuff in and like hit record to me, but it doesn't detract from how perfectly I think it kind of like flows into the just weirdness of EO. I think that's just like one of my favorite transitions on the whole thing. Listener Joe writes, at first, Elec 9 7 hours. I like to believe that the track is named that because this jam was 7 hours long. Like, that seems like a good theory, doesn't it? But anyway, Joe says, at first, Elec 9 7 hours sounded like Elec 6 onset is back to torture me for another 10 minutes. But I think the NTS sequel works far better than the Elsec original. I'm sure both were created using the same set of patches, but 7 hours sounds much more dynamic and has far more interesting things going on, both in the foreground and the background. I don't think we talked about it so much yet, but what do you think about this opening track? Do you like it?
I don't dislike it. You know, I think it's kind of cool to start it out like in kind of a divisive way, you know, like I think I said, you know, you're sort of jumping right into the deep end. And I think that's a good like you know, sort of starting point for NTS2. You know, this is the, you know, harder listening of the, you know, two that we've done so far. And so I think, you know, it's a good way to get you ready for it. You know, instead of like, you know, baby stepping you into it, just throwing you in there. I think the song's interesting. I didn't dislike L6 onset or anything too,
right,
you know.
Right. I just don't hear like the relationship very much. Like I believe based on the titles that they're related.
Yeah.
I can't hear it, but I think it's a little punishing and like a little challenging, like we were saying, but it's like kind of cool to me. And I think it amazingly kind of like breezes by in 10 minutes. Like mm-hmm. I mentioned how fast the first part of this record sounds, and somehow it just kind of like flows by. It's got kind of a cool, like something like a post-punky bass line to it in a weird way, that I think is like very appealing. And something weird about like, it sounds like kind of a four on the floor beat, but like something is messed up, you know, like it's like unquantized and is like kind of a mess or something like that. There's like, I'm just kind of transfixed by like this weird barrage of like pummeling, tumbling sounds, this weird kind of post-punky bass line, and then just like the first track on the first NTS, it makes like this interesting shift at the end where it like kind of slows down halftime and turns into this kind of like slower slam of a beat. I don't know. It's not like one of my favorites, but I just think it like flies by and is like a really cool intro.
Yeah, same. It's not one of my favorites, but I definitely don't have any beef with it.
So we talked, I think, maybe enough about these like more interlude type tracks, which we get a lot more of on this NTS session. But our listeners seem to dig them a lot, I want to note. Listener Ellen called Sinistral AB Air and Wet Gellis a welcome resting point and really nice. Listener Joe calls Peel MA another very welcome chill palate cleanser before kicking things back up a bit with Nine Crow. And listeners Jeff and Colin both praise the increased emphasis on ambient work throughout NTS, using each of these tracks as examples. So I guess we talked about them enough, but I guess I didn't get your like conclusion. Do you think they just work as interludes mostly and that's okay? Or do you, I don't know, is there something like valuable about them in themselves?
I think they work as interludes and that's okay. You know, you sort of need little things like that when you're doing such a long project. I don't think I would listen to, you know, if I was making a playlist or something, I don't think I would put any of those in there. But yeah, I mean, they've got their time and their place.
Yeah, I think I agree. I really like this comment from listener Joe, who writes, "My favorite thing about Carefree Counter Dronal and the sequence of Sinistral AB Air and Wet Gellis is that they feel a bit like station IDs that come at the top of the hour. They're short, and you can imagine some NPR host calmly telling you the time and reminding you what you're listening to. It's such a nice touch that I can't imagine they did this accidentally, especially since they come right around an hour in." What do you think about that, going back to the radio format? Is it some little nod to that?
I don't know, but it's funny because I was just thinking both these two are a couple seconds less than 2 hours, actually. Like, this is 1:19:53 and the other one's 52, which is just enough time to sneak an ID in there.
Wow.
Yeah, I was wondering that, but I work in radio in real life, but it's a internet radio station, so they don't actually have to ID. Also, right, I don't know the rules in England.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a funny little nod to, like, I mean, because that's what those station ID, or like those, not just those, but like the kind of announcements of what you're listening to and stuff. That's why they come at the top of the hour or whatever, to like kind of reset things. Mm-hmm. And these interludes kind of do work in a way to like kind of reset the momentum a little bit. What do you think about the closer? I don't think we talked about it at all. Turbile Epic Casual Stipple Idol, which listener Joe calls one of the only songs with epic in the title that doesn't cause me to cringe, because the term here really does apply. Adding, "It sounds like traveling through deep space, although you're moving at impossibly fast speeds, it seems like you're staying exactly still." I also want to read this comment from listener Ellen, who says her partner describes the last section, perhaps the Stipple Idol part, as, quote, "a soundtrack to an S&M session with what he thinks are whip sounds and moans." I think he has a point. So perhaps a Booth and Brown joke. I'll agree. It does kind of sound like whips to me after reading this. I kind of can't unhear that now. But what do you think about this closer more generally?
I didn't think about that, but yeah, it does sort of sound like whips. But in general, I like it. You know, it's we're going, you know, pretty drone and stuff. Not to jump ahead, but it is like sort [S2] Right. [S1] Of like a you know, it's a little like teaser for All In or something. I think, which being halfway, you know, through the whole project, I think is a good spot for it. I haven't talked about it much, basically because like I enjoy like that track and those kind of things. They're just like maybe not the most like interesting things to, you know, there's not a lot goes on, so they're more difficult to speak on, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one thing here that is definitely like, I don't know, just so long and feels like it's filling space. I mean, I do think it's important, something we'll talk about more later, obviously, where it's like they're kind of laying the groundwork with some of these like more mm-hmm. still pieces for where the whole NTS sessions is going. And I think that's absolutely important and essential to do. And this track has a kind of like, it just has that kind of like minimalism. We've talked about this before, but just the size of it is overwhelming. And that's like really important to the experience of it, you know? But it doesn't really reward like any kind of close listening or anything like that. I mean, there's something interesting about it because you get these kind of, I don't know, like little like wispy synth things, like little lines that kind of like toying around deep in it. But then it's just like this big reverb wall or something. And that reverb wall at points gets like a little, I don't know, I wrote down croaky, like a didgeridoo or something, like kind of that kind of like meditative state. So something like didgeridoo plus, I don't know, electric crackling and droning and stuff. And I'm just kind of torn. It's really not very fun to listen to, but like the size of it is impressive, and I think it does important groundwork laying, you know?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much exactly what I mean. You know, it's you're right. It doesn't, like, it's not the track you want to zoom in on and listen to on its own or something. I think it works really well inside of the project, especially the project as a whole.
Yeah. All right. So we, I think, successfully touched on every track, and I'm trying to make this podcast less time than the actual two sessions, you know, the actual NTS session we're talking about. But, you know, how would you sum up your feelings on NTS2? I'm kind of curious if you prefer this one or NTS1.
You know, I was trying to, like, think of that. You know, I talked about it with LSEC. Like, I always like to rate, you know, albums on Rate Your Music, and LSEC and NTS I've always only had rated, you know, as, like, the entire projects. But last time I rated each individual LSEC, and I was trying to do it with this one. And, you know, I haven't done it yet because I think I'm gonna wait until all four because I'm not sure. I think I like one the most, and then, you know, out of these two, and then I'll listen to two and I'll be like, oh no, two's way better. And then when I get back to one, I'm like, one's way better than two. So it's a bit of a, you know, weaseling out of the question, but I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like they're quite different experiences, honestly. And there's something about NTS1 that, like, has that, like, kind of greatest hits quality I was talking about, where just, like, everything kills for me. And NTS2 is more of, like, the mixed bag that you would expect on, like, such a large project, even though I do think, like, the quality is still so high. I mean, there are some, like, oddballs here. I think they serve important purposes, and, like, the main tracks, I think, are still absolutely killer, like some of the best Autechre I've ever made. But it's just such a different vibe compared to, like, the party that is NTS1, and then, like, the weird mechanical, like, destruction or, like, post-apocalyptic world or something of NTS2. I do have a hard time deciding, but I can safely say that I fucking love both of these.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, to wrap up, I just want to touch on some big picture stuff that we might, you know, return to next time, but could start thinking about now. First, listener Marco says that the extreme length is just too much for him, and that he wishes there was a choristist version of the album, because, to be honest, I don't hear anything in them that justifies the sheer length of the tracks. Do you think these two NTS sessions justify their lengths?
I do. You know, I don't mind long music, though, so maybe that's, you know, like, I think I understand what the listener's saying. You know, I think if maybe you're not accustomed to it, or you don't, I mean, just flat out don't enjoy, like, long things, I could see, like, not thinking this is your favorite thing and all. But I don't know. I think, like, oftentimes, like, in pieces, especially in experimental music, like, being so long is, like, part of the fun of it, you know, like, you know, like well-tuned piano or something, like that being, you know, 8 hours is part of the fun of that piece, you know?
Right.
And I feel like that here too, you know, sure. Some of these tracks, like, especially the ones that are more sort of loopy and don't move around as much, like, yeah, sure. You could, you know, there's some of them that you could make, instead of being 20 minutes, you could make 10 or 5 or whatever. And I guess that would, you know, be choristicizing them. But I like that we have, you know, I like that Turbile Epic Casual is 21 and a half minutes, you know, like, it's the same thing, you know, with the last song on Quad Range that's super long.
Right.
You know, like, I think that piece is more interesting because it's 56 minutes in length. You know, you could cut it to 5, but I just don't think it would have, like, the same impact.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, I think that Turbile Epic Casual is the only song that, like, kind of works like that here, though, because it's the only one that it could be, like, 10 minutes, and I think you would get, like, a similar impression. But yeah, you would lose some of that impact. Mm-hmm. But pretty much every other song here, I feel like, totally justifies its, like, true length. I mentioned the sort of forward momentum of these tracks, and they just wouldn't be so, like, dazzling and amazing, I think, if, like, you know, could you imagine like a 5-minute T1A1, like, what would that, it wouldn't even be anything, you know? It just, like, it has to, like, kind of plot on.
It's got to exactly. And in NTS2, I think even more, you know, there's less to cut because we've got shorter links here. And yeah,
they,
I mean,
feel carefully cut, honestly, like, carefully edited.
No, exactly. Like Voivik, I don't think that would be as effective shorter. you know, I feel like it moves from one place to another, and it look like completely justifies its length.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, totally, especially on NTS2, which it just does feel like they were cramming as much as they could in here. On that note, Joe says that the NTS sessions work regardless of the way you listen to it, either as an 8-hour long album, 2-hour radio shows, or even as individual sides of vinyl. He has, I think the reason why NTS succeeds a bit more than LSEC is a secret and overlooked ingredient, how the sessions are structured. Up until the second quarter of session 4, the music is sequenced into about 20-minute chunks to fit on sides of LPs. While sides of LPs were originally a technical restriction, I think it has turned out that 20 or so minutes is a pretty darn good amount of time for a single sitting of music before switching a side. With LSEC, it seems like Sean and Rob just started composing music, were never really sure how to release it, and never had physical formats in mind throughout the creative process. In contrast, they started editing and composing NTS after they knew they had 2-hour slots to fill, and it seemed like they decided pretty early on that they were going to do a vinyl release as well. It might simply be that we have been conditioned by physical formats to expect flow to come in a certain way, but I think that having to keep sides of vinyl in mind greatly contributed to improving the flow of NTS over LSEC. What do you think about that theory?
I like it, and I agree with it. You know, we've talked about, like, in like the 90s and stuff, like when the CD really like took over, you know, people felt like, since you can fit 90 minutes on it, you gotta fit 90 minutes on it. And it caused a lot of, there's a lot of like rap albums in particular that, you know, you could lose 40 minutes from, and then they would just be like straight 5 out of 5, you know, classics.
Yeah.
But there's so much filler, you know, just because that technical restraint of the vinyl got lost. And I think the listener's right, you know, 20, 22 minutes is like a good time, you know, to have at least a section of something, give you that, you know, even if it's just standing up and walking over to the turntable and flipping it, you know, taking 30 seconds, or you can, you know, take a little bit of a break. I mean, I said I listened to this on vinyl, and I would do that. You know, I didn't always stop, you know, completely at NTS1. I was listening to it on record and reading. So I just, when I was done reading, I would be done with that side, you know, of a record. And it does like work like that. And LSEC, I think, does suffer a little bit in it doesn't have any, you could tell that there was never any sort of like vinyl or
yeah,
you know, physical release, like really thought through in it. And it messes with the, you know, the being able to sit through the whole thing.
Yeah. And it's like, because they decided, I guess it must've been after the fact that like, okay, we should divvy this up into like 45, 50 minute chunks. You get like really weird, you know, little segments that just don't feel fully developed, because mm-hmm. some of them are only like 3 tracks, and it's just like not long enough to like build a cohesive feeling or something like that.
I mean,
that.
We talked about it. It works so much better as an entire piece.
Yeah. Just as a whole thing. But it still has like this weird twisting kind of thing just because of the way things are sequenced. You know, sometimes like, you know, like 2 30-minute tracks on the same like kind of little segment there mm-hmm. is just sometimes bizarre. Yeah, here, I mean, I just feel like it's so carefully sequenced with like that thought of like the 20-minute intervals. You know, Joe also mentions that like XI's individual 12-inches all feel like self-satisfying, self-contained releases in themselves. I think the individual sides of NTS work very well on their own. Most of the individual tracks are so well developed that they feel totally satisfying outside of the context of the album. On the other hand, there are also smaller interval-esque tracks that work brilliantly as either intros or palate cleansers. You know, we were kind of alluding to that with some of these interludes and things, but you just never feel like totally satisfied with one LSEC. But here it's like you feel there's so much time, like you feel totally satisfied, totally stuffed by the end of one of these sessions. But also I think it's true that some of these, you know, these individual tracks, at least these 20-minute chunks and these like longer tracks, they do feel like totally satisfying holes. Sounds like we're both kind of in agreement there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just in the way we decided to do these last two podcasts, you know, LSEC, we felt like we had to do all as, you know, one big chunk because it just works so much better. NTS, yeah. I think is you can do it either way. You know, I mean, I've never sat for 8 hours and listened to the whole thing in one sitting, but you know, you can listen to one, or you can listen to two of them, you know, three, you can listen to half of it. You know, it really does like break down better.
I mean, I think just like beautifully organized, and I do think that it was like the physical constriction. I think they kind of turned back to it because they saw it as like actually unlocking something for them. So we'll obviously have to save our NTS rankings for next time in our like ongoing rankings of every album we've talked about. But do you have any closing thoughts on this half chapter of the Autechre journey? How did it, you know, go these past 2 weeks with NTS 1 and 2?
Yeah, I mean, it went great. I hadn't gotten the chance to listen to these, you know, in a while because we've been going through the whole discography, and I've purposely like tried to, you know, not jump ahead or anything. So it had been longer than I think I normally would go without listening to at least, you know, parts of NTS. So it was nice to revisit an old friend.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say that this has always been one of my, I mean, for the last 3 years, one of my favorite Autechre releases ever. You know, nothing changed there. I feel like, you know, we talked about this before, but unlike a lot of weeks, I could happily spend like another 2 weeks just listening to these two sessions. I think they're so deep and like so rich and rewarding. Don't want to spoil anything, but I just feel like this is like peak Autechre for me, this era, and I feel like I don't know, just absolutely firing on all cylinders. And you know, I kind of already know what's coming, and I know that it is also very fucking good, so you know, I expect it to continue to be great.
Yeah, all right. Well, what do you think about the NTS sessions? No listener email episode next week, but we'll discuss NTS 3 and 4 in 2 weeks. And in addition to that, we'll sum up our feelings on the entire project. So send us your thoughts, anything NTS, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. We'll get back to doing listener email episodes after that, though. So feel free to email us really about anything you want. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram, @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.